I'm your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast, Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Hello and welcome to The Doc Says here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania Era book series and of the Doctor's Orders on lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, thank you for making me a part of your day. It's the return of the Sunday wrestling conversation this evening, come a night later. Wanted to make sure that all three parties that are going to be on the show tonight had a chance to watch and digest AEW's second offering, Fyter Fest. So, specifically targeting that particular event, I'm bringing on tonight a very successful duo who runs one of the better podcasts in the world, in my opinion. They talk about All Elite every Saturday night, or every Saturday, on LOP Radio, and they are the former hosts of the absolutely fantastic WCW The Legacy series. So, gentlemen, Ms. Fan, the LOP Mystic Shane, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you both.
Thank you for having us. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Greetings to all Ms. Fan fans out there and to anyone who did listen to WCW The Legacy series. I am so proud of the legacy, so to speak, of that show. Thank you, Doc, very much for having us on.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about AEW's Fyter Fest. I want to get everybody's general takes. We're going to start with Shane. You know, last night, not nearly the kind of hype we had for Double or Nothing. So different sort of vibe going in. You had the fact that it was free. You had Jon Moxley's debut in AEW. There are a lot of good vibes, but it was just a different sort of feel. So what was your takeaway from the show?
Okay, so you said that you were going to give us 24 hours to digest it, and I cannot say that I have digested it fully at this point, because I think the first question is, what are we to compare this to realistically? What are they going for? Is it a glorified house show and we just want eyeballs on this? Is it Clash of the Champions level where you get it for free but it's more than a TV show? We don't really know what to compare it to. So I'm going to talk more personally how I felt in my personal wrestling fandom, which is very mixed. There was part of the show that I was embarrassed that I've almost got my girlfriend to watch wrestling for the first time and some of the stuff they were doing. Then there's a little bit of the product that now it's getting better, but it's hard to get into it because I'm still transitioning out of some of the free show, some of the early stuff. And then towards the end of the show, I feel like they delivered at that level that I expect them to deliver, with the Cody Rhodes, Darby Allin, that's a hell of a story, with MJF, with the Jon Moxley thing. It is his debut, but it's also a non-sanctioned match. So I think that's a good way to get mileage out of it, in that, yes, we're giving you this match to put eyeballs on the show, but you're going to get that match with Kenny Omega. You're going to get a sanctioned match. You're going to get that big match a little bit later on. So it's almost a twofer. It's almost a chance to get Moxley twice. I hope we're not bound to non-sanctioned matches more often than not with Moxley. But I thought, for what it was, it did what it needed to do. I don't think we can judge it fully until maybe October, because right now they're putting together a package that includes All Out to get us to TV. This is not a standalone in any world just to do business by itself.
Ms. Fan, what'd you think?
Well, after I watched Double or Nothing, my opinion changed many times over the course of the week. Till we actually did a show about it, till we did All About, All Elite. We waited a week to do that. So my opinion could change a lot before we record our show for Fyter Fest, which, again, we're taking about a week to do. As of right now, though, I got to say, for the most part, I was a huge fan of it. I definitely can feel what Shane is talking about with some of the early stuff. Did not connect with me. some stuff that was more of a red flag that we didn't see at Double or Nothing that we did see here. But once we really got into the show proper and the stuff that I was really looking forward to, because I knew coming in there were a couple things that were probably not going to be that much for me. And that's okay, because that might be for somebody else. But yeah, once we got into the big matches, I was just having a great time. I'm so feeling fresh about this product. And I don't know, I'm just having a really good time with it. So I came away from Fyter Fest not liking it as much as Double or Nothing, but that's an incredibly high bar, and it's not really meant to be the same type of show like Shane was talking about. So leave maybe the next true like fan-shattering moment for All Out. And in the meantime, I just thought it was a really fun show.
When you guys say that there was some stuff about it that you were a little bit leery of, was that on the pre-show? Was that on the buy-in that you're talking about, or was there stuff from the main show that you felt that way about too?
For me, it was in the buy-in, the majority of it. And so we can make this argument, okay, that's the free part, that's the buy-in, but I have two problems with that. Number one, are we just going to like yield the free part that fans might come to in order to order the event to that can be garbage time? And also, if you're going to be sports-centric, I will never be – Ms. Fan and I would get along in this way because we try to be open-minded, and I will never say, you can't have comedy, you can't have this, you can't have that. But if you're going to be sports-centric and you're building to a pay-per-view show where things are going to be really serious, some of the building would also have to be serious. Like, you need some tension, I feel like, in the air, in the arena, in the show. You can't just say, okay, now it's 15 minutes into our actual pay-per-view, so – tension, I feel the building. So that's where I am with that. And we can name names if we have to later, but that must have was the free show for me.
That's a very stark contrast now, two shows in a row. It seems like the buy-in is just not thus far to be meant to be taken that seriously from the way they've presented it both nights. So like, I thought, I don't know if you guys would disagree with this opinion, but I mean, I think it seemed very clear with the buy-in from Double or Nothing, that really wasn't, even though there was a match with stakes, that really wasn't treated as seriously, or it didn't even seem like it was being put on by the same promotion as the main card. And I felt the same way tonight. It was like, okay, right at the very end, you had that little 30-second Jon Moxley promo that closed out the buy-in, and then you start the main show with an incredible video package that segued very nicely from Double or Nothing into this show. And it was like, okay, now you get the little, I liked the music they played in the background at the beginning of the show. And there it just took off. You had the announcers running down the main three matches, and it was great from that point forward. I mentioned on Twitter, and I think that's probably the best way I can put it to you guys in recapping my thoughts on the show, which is that it was not the fandom-enhancing, fandom-altering experience that was Double or Nothing, but it was a blast. And if this is what we can expect from their minor shows like this, then it, to me, just did nothing more than confirm that AEW is appointment viewing no matter when it is on, from here on out until proven otherwise. I thought that the top three matches yet again delivered in many, you know, not to the same degree, but as Shane mentioned, in different ways than Double or Nothing. And I thought that the undercard was really good, and I really liked the women's match on the main card as well. I've seen a lot of mixed opinion on that. I've seen some people call it a star and a half, and some people call it four stars. I mean, say what you will about star ratings, but what that means to me is that some people thought it was great, and some people thought it was crap. I can't imagine thinking it was crap. I thought it was really fun, and it was a really awesome showcase of Nyla Rose that I thought that maybe the Double or Nothing match might have been if they had not have pulled the surprise there, bringing an awesome Kong. So all in all, a very successful night. So Shane, I'm going to throw it back to you. If there's one major talking point that you would like to focus on that coming out of Fyter Fest, what would it be? And then we'll discuss that among the three of us.
Okay, so I will go broad, and then I will hit you with what it is. But broadly speaking, it is a good time in AEW, not simply because of the top-tier talent, but the crop that's coming next. So if you watched that Darby Allin match and you didn't get anything out of it, I don't know what to tell you. But Darby Allin, MJF, I'm blanking on other guys, but I can give you a list. And it felt a lot like early 90s WCW to me when I got attracted to that as a kid because of the Steve Austins and the Dustin Rhodes and the Mick Foleys and wanted to see them come up. And so I'm going to give a really, really hot take because it filled my mind last night and I almost couldn't sleep. And it's not the most direct thing that happened on the show. So it's not Cody's headshot, which I can give you 15 links if you want to read about that all day. This is something else. This is me thinking for the first time that in the past CM Punk, maybe 10 years, past 10 years, when we talk about the best in the world, many times we're talking about who is the best wrestler in the ring. But one of the biggest reasons I watch professional wrestling, I enjoy the matches, but the matches only matter to me when the characters matter. So I started thinking last night, if we called best in the world, if our assessment for best of the world happened to be who is the best personality, who's drawing the most heat, who can elicit that thing that makes you sit up, pay attention, and care. Is there any chance that this is not blasphemous to say that the man that I gave a 3 to 5 year window before he became a top star, the man who is only 23 years old, is there a small potential that I could get into a conversation and say, if we had best in the world based on that criteria, that right now MJF might be the best in the world? And I'm just going to say real quick that I think you got to prove it week in and week out, but there's no TV right now. I'm just saying in this moment, is this man that I was saying in 5 years should be a world champion, is he already, in regards to storytelling, eliciting heat, personality, knowing who he is and what he needs to do when he goes out there, is there a chance he's already doing those things right now?
I swear to God, that thought crossed my mind last night watching it too, because nobody elicited the kind of reaction that MJF elicited. He is a natural with the microphone in hand. He is a natural at playing the bad guy that you want to see get his ass kicked. And, I mean, it seems like it's going to be sooner than later. I mean, I've listened to your show religiously since you guys debuted it in January, February. And, frankly, I mean, the guy, you hyped him up a lot to me before I ever saw him. So I saw him first at Double or Nothing, now seeing him again. You give that guy a microphone. It's like he's got, you know, I mean, it's. I think it's easy to compare him to The Miz. You know, I think that though he has something, he has a little bit more of a presence, though, than The Miz did. I mean, The Miz could get the job done on the microphone, but he came from that WWE system, and it just didn't seem like that there was necessarily that much there in the early going, and it made sense for him to be someone that you looked at with that 3 to 5 year window as well. I think MJF is someone who can organically rise to that position faster. Best in the world? I'd have to think on that a little bit more, but one of those guys who you could legitimately claim to be a top five AEW star right now, you know, argue against that. I think that's a very interesting thought, and one that I admit did cross my mind last night as well. I was thinking a year from now, if MJF was the champion of AEW, I wouldn't be shocked. What'd you think, Ms. Fan? What do you think about that?
Well, we didn't talk about format or answers or anything, but this often happens with the people I podcast with because I like to think I pick good partners. My major talking point was going to be very similar to that, focusing not just on MJF, but also another, I want to throw focus back again on Darby Allin, because talk about people with star potential. And on paper, you may think, yeah, maybe a few years down the line, but I want to expand my talking point a little further, and I want to ask, does AEW have it in them? Are they bold enough to have guys jump the line? Because right now, there's an obvious focus on the Elite and Jon Moxley, and everyone else is maybe a step behind them. Those are like the big stars that everyone, you know, that they're going to be in the focus. They're going to be in the spotlight. But on this show, you have Darby Allin in there taking Cody Rhodes to the max. You have MJF in there drawing a hell of a lot more attention than Hangman Page, it has to be said. You have Joey Janela in there going spot for spot, nutty hardcore thing for nutty hardcore thing with Jon Moxley. You have women in there tearing it up. You have people discovering Chima. You have all sorts of stuff in here. So I totally agree with Shane as far as MJF. If you look at it through a certain lens, I think he is one of the best in the world at doing a certain kind of thing, and that certain kind of thing means a lot to me. And you got, I think, a lot of people, with MJF and Darby Allin being at the top of the pack, ready to possibly be bigger stars than some members of the Elite. So does AEW have the courage to go in on that if that's what the fans want?
What do we think about that? Shane, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that they will? You guys follow this stuff as closely as anyone that I have that I've encountered. So with you guys and how much you've studied the ins and outs and every little bit of information they've thrown out there, all the videos they've put on display, what's your temperature reading on that right now? Because that's a huge question. Because, I mean, MJF seems like the kind of guy who he better damn well be jumping to the front of some sort of line. And that may not be the best example because he is so front and center with a lot of what they've been doing in these videos. He's got the relationship with Cody Rhodes that could be very fruitful on and off screen. But like a Darby Allin, or like trying to think of who might be another really good example. Any other really obvious examples that jump to your mind that seem like candidates on that level? Like, I thought, but here's one I'll throw out there. In that Fatal 4-Way match that MJF was such a star in, second place, in my opinion, was Jungle Boy.
Agreed.
I have been saying this throughout. Keep your eyes on Jungle Boy, keep your eyes on Luchasaurus, because I think they both have something. So that maybe also, if they team up, that's the tag equivalent. Like, would you be willing to put it on Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus instead of Young Bucks and, you know, whomever? So I think they play, I think that fits. I want to say a couple of things here. So with the MJF, the reason I brought MJF up as well is because I saw him three times last night. I saw him in his match, saw him with Cody Rhodes, and I watched him with the media afterward. And he's the only wrestler who I watched with the media because he's the only one that interested me enough to do so. So I will say, number one, will AEW do this? There's no way to predict it because, in my opinion, they've already low-key broken trust a little bit in what they've said, and they've only done two shows. So what they've said is, we're going to be the wrestling promotion that will push you according to fan response. So we'll flip the script if the fans demand it. And yet, so far, you got one of the, in my humble opinion, you got one of the coldest challengers in Hangman Page for the first world title that I have ever seen, in that he did nothing special at Double or Nothing in a match that all three of us, at least Doc and I are on the record right now already on this episode, have said the match was kind of in some ways a throwaway. And he just came in at the end. MJF pointed that out. He just came in at the end and won it. So I thought, by God, he's got to step up in this four-way. And Doc has already said on this show that the second best guy in the match was Jungle Boy, and MJF being number one. So he didn't do it again. And yet he's going to the world title match it all out. To me, that's already a little bit of a breach of trust in what you're saying. So who knows in that regard. But MJF is legitimately hot. He's got some Chris Jericho in him, in that he will walk out on the company eventually, I think, if he doesn't get what he thinks he deserves. And good for him. But also, we did WCW The Legacy Series for over 3 years. If you have not heard that, Google it, because it's some of the best work I feel like I've done in my life in any regard. And we covered pay-per-views from 88 to 2001. One of the greatest stories, in my humble opinion, Lex Luger and Sting. You're not going to hear this anywhere else, but that friendship in 96, 97, where Lex Luger's a heel, Sting's a babyface, but they care about each other in that context. If they continue to do that with MJF and Cody Rhodes, to watch the biggest heel just completely dump on the audience and cut through them, and then come out and be legit sincerely worried. And he didn't change who he was. He's still MJF. He still pushed away other people, but legitimately worried about his friend and mentor. That's him doing two different roles and doing them as good or better than anybody in the segment. So I think MJF will push his way there. I will leave the others for Miz fan, because one thing I'll throw out there to you is, What in your opinions, what does it mean? Why, when should someone jump the line? Because if Moxley's hot, and Cody's hot, and Kenny's hot, what makes it where I should then say, never mind that, Darby Allin should be my champion.
Well, I think AEW's got to show a lot of flexibility in how they put together their process and exhibit it once it's time to go to these big shows. Because I think that I brought this up. I joined the LOP Aftershock program last night because I was so excited about Fyter Fest. I really did love the show. But I posed this question. Here we are. We've got Jon Moxley is the hottest name in the game right now. And I don't think anything that happened last night did anything to stop that momentum. If anything, it was just, all right, if their goal was to make it clear that AEW Jon Moxley is going to be a hell of a lot different than WWE Dean Ambrose, then mission accomplished. So that said, I think that it's going to look back, I think it, maybe it already does. There are a lot of people out there, I think, that are willing to give Hangman Page a chance. You know, I'm kind of quietly looking back on what I saw, what I've heard, what you guys have said, what I've read in rumors and innuendo and all that stuff, and watching what I see with my own two eyes. And I see, okay, both times, the only thing that stood out about Hangman Page in the matches he was involved in was the fact that he won. So that's not exactly a great thing. I think he's got something there. Yeah. But, you know, I look at Omega and I look at Moxley, and one of the bigger talking points you guys had throughout the sort of that middle portion of All About All Elite, before there was a lot to actually discuss that had been announced or, you know, had taken shape for Double or Nothing, was who do you put the title on? Who's going to be the first champion? What's that look like? Do you bring in a WWE guy like, I mean, and one of the guys at the time to talk about was Dean Ambrose, was Jon Moxley. Now, looking at where he is, I think it may end up being a calculated misfire not to have just held off through Double or Nothing and see, all right, coming out of this show, who's the hottest acts in this game? We've got these two middle-of-the-road shows we can use to figure out how we're going to crown our champion at All Out. I think maybe Omega versus Moxley is going to feel like the main event of All Out. It already does. It's got that sort of clash of ideologies that you guys talked about so much, about you don't want a WWE guy being the first champion, but Kenny Omega, that's too predictable. But Kenny Omega represents what this company is sort of about in a way, but Jon Moxley does too now, but he still represents the other company. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff you can draw from. And you look at Jericho versus Hangman Page, and they just have so far to go to make it that caliber of interesting. So to answer your question regarding how do you get from, you know, these three or four guys that are at the top to Darby Allin jumping in, I think it's just got to be one of those things where, you know, if Darby Allin goes out there with a lesser storyteller than Cody Rhodes and does what he did last night yet again and then yet again and then yet again, then a year from now, you know, if he's over like crazy in a similar fashion the way MJF is quickly building momentum, then, hey, if Adam Hangman Page ain't that over, then, you know, tough titmouse, man. It's time to move to the next guy.
I'm going to say one. Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'll go. I want to say just a couple things about that. I'll say one, give you a chance to react, and I'll say the other, and I'll try not to go on forever about it. Thing with Hangman Page, yeah, just very cold. Totally appreciate you. Maybe want to be patient, give him a little bit of time. Definitely agree that kind of throwing him in last minute into this title picture was not really the way to go. You know, we talked a lot about how we hoped to crown the champion will be more of a process, like a longer ongoing thing, and it definitely did not turn out to be that, which is and has been a little disappointing. But with Hangman Page, I'm just really struggling with the guy, and I really liked him coming in. Like, I was kind of championing him a little on our show, but I don't know, just since AEW started, like, I watch my brother watches wrestling with me, and he doesn't really follow it outside of me watching it with him, but he likes to watch with me. We watched All In, we watched Double or Nothing. We watched the Battle Royal. We watched the championship ceremony with Bret Hart, all that stuff. We came to this show, Hangman Page comes out. My brother turns to me and says, "Who's this guy?" And I'm like, "Wow." And I couldn't blame him, though, because, you know, in the Battle Royal, didn't stand out. Even in the championship ceremony, didn't stand out. It was all about MJF. So the guy's really struggling, you know, and you're right that Omega and Moxley is looking a lot better for a title match right now.
Yeah, I also think it should be Moxley versus Omega, which was the easier thing to do because originally it was going to be Pac versus Omega. I don't know how they decided when that didn't work out, we're going to switch it over. But the one thing I will say, Chris Jericho has already had his close the night horror with Triple H at WrestleMania. And if they if they're not careful, they're going to mess around and give him his second world title night closer like that. Sorry, I'm being petty.
That's a call, but a shout out to WrestleMania 18 there to the author of the WrestleMania era. So,
man, indeed. Well, I hope that I really hope. I mean, looking forward a little bit here. I mean, I'm hoping that whatever they've done a great job of making me care about things that I didn't think I would care about with really well produced interviews on the road to whatever shows that they're producing. Like I think the classic example for me in early AEW history is Cody versus Dustin Rhodes. Didn't care a thing about that. Was disappointed when I heard it, as I believe the two of you were. And then they did that one set of videos, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm sold. Never mind. And so I don't think it would take that much to turn me around. I think that they've just got to, hopefully they have got a pulse on this. And they are going to recognize that they're going to have to put a hell of a lot more effort into it than they have to this point because, you know, cold is not what you want for your world title challenger. I am absolutely willing to give this guy a shot. He's over. I mean, it's not like he's not over. I mean, he gets a good reaction. Yeah. He just doesn't get – there's just not that much that's interesting about him yet. So we'll see. I want to jump to a quick takeaway that I had. Ms. Fan, actually, quickly, you had another thing you wanted to say, did you not?
Yeah, just one other point tying back to thinking about who AEW is going to focus on. I want to point out two things that happened on the show that was very similar. You had Cody and Darby Allin, and I think that was a hell of a moment for Darby Allin. That was the match I was invested in the most by far, and I knew I'd be invested coming in, and they surpassed my expectations even more just with a great performance. And right in the moment of what I felt like should have been Darby Allin's moment, we suddenly pivot complete focus to Sean Spears, who, I don't know, has he earned that spot or is he just a friend of Cody Rhodes? You know, we know that he is, so it's a big question mark over that. Fast forward to the end of the night, Joey Janela goes to war with Jon Moxley. They have what I thought was a great hardcore match that really did everything it needed to do, everything it could do, given the context it was done in. Could have been a big moment for Joey Janela, but again, immediate shift of focus, and it's all about Moxley and Omega. So now you've got Darby Allin and Joey Janela, who really just gave a hell of a performance, and then are they really getting their moment? They're not getting nothing because people are still talking about them, but I don't know. It's just something that stood out to me, so I just wanted to throw that out there to kind of elaborate my point a little more.
In response to that, and it'll segue into my sort of hot take, I guess you could say, I think that they're doing a good job, and I guess part of where I'm – I know I've been getting a lot of these comments on Twitter about, you know, levying the same kind of higher powered microscope that I'm putting this product under that I would the WWE. But, you know, AEW hasn't done anything yet to offend me. I've got nothing but goodwill toward these guys so far. So I'm willing to give them a lot of the benefit of the doubt. And that was one of those things that you watch it and, you know, Darby Allin certainly had a standout performance because that was the best story told of the night. That was utterly fantastic and really spoke to, in my opinion, how really well-rounded Cody Rhodes has become over the last couple of years as a storyteller since we last saw him in a mainstream sort of situation. He has become absolutely fantastic. And Cody Rhodes, to me, I can't say he was the guy I was coming into AEW most expecting to be excited about, but I am now. It's like, okay, what's Cody Rhodes doing? Because it seems like every show, right in the middle, he's giving you this emotional anchor for the entire night. And Darby Allin, he combined with Cody for what I felt was probably my favorite match of the night. Certainly the best story told of the night by a long shot, though I did agree that Joey Janela and John Moxley had a hell of a hardcore match. And I liked the six-man tag as well, just for a fun exhibition of flippy moves type thing. A lot of variety on these shows. Love and frankly, the women's match, again, going back to that, I thought that was awesome too.
I put it on the same tier. Yeah, that was right up there with the last three for me. I agree.
You know, superstar making performance from Nyla Rose. But here's the thing about Sean Spears, about Kenny Omega coming out. I think they're doing a good job in situations like that of, all right, Darby Allin, we want to introduce you to this guy. Joey Janela, we want to introduce you to this guy. And they're going to get their spotlight, but then we're going to use this to build to the next big match. And I think there is a lot to be said about the idea of what I presume will be Cody Rhodes versus Sean Spears at All Out. Not exactly giving me the feels to start with. But I think the thing that makes this interesting is the thing everyone's talking about in the negative light. My hot take from this show is the unprotected chair shot to the head. Who blanking cares? Cody Rhodes decided to do that, and it, to me, immediately afterwards, for them to be talking about concussions and CTE, to me, this is an angle. Until proven otherwise, this is something they're going to lean into, and they're going to turn it into an angle. And it's going to make this whole thing with Sean Spears, who, when he walked out, I said this on Aftershock last night on LOP Radio, I said, when he walked out, the first thing that popped into my head is, crap. I don't really give a shit about Sean Spears. But then after that chair shot, I started to care. Because, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, all right, say what you will about blood and professional wrestling. So say what you will about unprotected chair shots. But, you know, what are we, the freaking morality police? I mean, how many flippy moves does everyone go crazy about that sees guys land straight on the top of their damn head multiple times per match? And we're like, 5 stars! But a guy takes a chair shot to the side of the head and does it voluntarily and does it, you know, in as protected as way as you can do that. And everyone's all up in arms. I have not read a single review of that show that did not include some variation of the following phrase. There is no place for that in professional wrestling in 2019. And hey, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but apparently Cody Rhodes disagrees with that. So if that's the case, if that's the route that they're going to take, and it's a limited thing, and it's not something we see all the time, and it was used for the purpose of making something interesting out of a guy who's never for a second in his career been interesting in Sean Spears, then hey, more power to him. End rant.
You are speaking my language, sir, in every manner possible. Yes, absolutely. I've never one time been interested in Sean Spears. The most I've ever been interested in him was last night, and I will say it because of this. After he came in petty for no good reason and hit Cody Rhodes in the head, apparently because Cody Rhodes made an offhanded comment weeks ago, that was the first time I believed him as a human being. Because what he comes off to me as is somebody who is smug and thinks they deserve better than they've ever earned. But that's never been his character. His character's been a feel-good, like, connect with the crowd, like, oh, we're doing this thing. And so when he was standing in his pettiness, I was like, oh, that's you. That's the you I've seen the whole time, but now you're performing your truth. So in that way, I like that. Then with Darby Allin, I will say this. I don't know if there's a better way to give Darby Allin a moment than to take away his moment. Because that goes right into Darby Allin's psychology that, can I go the limit with him? I went the limit with him, and the minute I went the limit with him, it was not about me. So I think there's a lot that they can do there. And then finally, the final comment about the chair. I've had people texting me too today, and they're tired of hearing about the chair and the morality police, as you say. And that's the problem to me with the morality police, is the fact that you just give them one thing to focus on, and that's the thing. Oh, you cannot have that. We won't allow that. You don't do that. But like you said, people get injured. from other things. If we said, okay, it's not about chair shots, it's about falling on your head in spot fest, then all of them would be doing that, and they would ignore the chair shots. So I would rather trust Cody Rhodes with it. I don't want to see it all the time. The Tony Khan claim is that it was a gimmick chair and it was a mess up. That's at least the word they're putting out. But what it did in the moment went well. Cody Rhodes seems to be okay. And if you want to share your opinion about, I don't want to see that in my wrestling, but I'm so tired of everybody's language being, you cannot do this. You don't get to do this. This is 2019. You can't do this. They did it. Maybe they'll cave after this and not do it anymore, but blood does tell an emotional story. Watch Dustin Rhodes versus Cody, and blood and a Rhodes, whether it's Dusty, Dustin, or Cody, tells an even more emotional story. So maybe not the unprotected headshots, but you can't keep a man with the last name of Rhodes from bleeding. I dare you to try, and I don't want to see that day. So that's my bit.
Fair enough on all of that. I'll say especially to the Janela and Allin bits with people coming in after. It's not make or break for me. It is just something that occurred to me, and it's something that I want to watch going forward. Not something that I see as a huge red flag. Just, I don't know, I want the really fresh people to be able to get their moments to become stars, because we've seen a lot of wasted generations of guys not getting that chance, and I don't think AEW is going to have that problem, but it's just something that occurs to me. On the chair thing, I'll say I'm a little bit more on the other side of the fence. I do get what you guys are saying. It's not necessarily our job to dictate the morals, what people can and can't do in the wrestling ring. And, yeah, any kind of wrestling is going to cause some kind of damage to your body, and that's all true. I will say, if Sean Spears is unable to be interesting without doing these kind of spots, maybe he's just not interesting and we shouldn't try to force it, but I guess we'll see what he does in the future. For chair shots in general, I hear what you guys are saying, but to me it's a question of escalation. Cody has the benefit of buying a special gimmick chair and maybe just doing it once, but I think I just worry you send the message that, yeah, we're doing unprotected chair shots in wrestling again, and then suddenly, you know, we're getting 10 of them in a match, and, you know, maybe not for AEW, but maybe for other places. And maybe it's not their responsibility to care about that, but it's something that does occur to me. I'm very wary of head trauma in general. I've had a lot of kind of traumatizing experiences myself. Katsuyori Shibata made his own choice to headbutt Okada in the skull in a match, and he went to a hospital bed and almost died. He'll never wrestle again. Mitsuru Amasawa made a choice to get dropped on his head for his whole career, and he died in the ring. Chris Benoit made a choice, you know, to smash his head against everything in sight, and we know what happened there. So I'm not going to say they can't do it. I don't need to try to dictate anybody else's life. I'll just say personally, as a fan, it makes me uncomfortable, and I hope we don't see it again. So that's just my take on that.
And look, I mean, this is my field. I mean, this is dealing with the aftermath of head and neck trauma is what I do for a living. So, you know, that being said, professional wrestling in general is incredibly taxing to the human body, and it's there are certain risks that are totally unnecessary that every time that I see one, like for instance in that Naito and Ibushi match from a couple of weeks ago at Dominion. I mean, that was awful, but that was also, that wasn't planned. You know, that was not a planned spot. It went wrong and he hit the side of his head. I mean, it was awful. He could have broken his neck. I'm surprised he didn't. So there are always going to be those moments that are cringeworthy. But, you know, if that's what they're choosing to do, if that's what they choose to put their bodies through, then sure, I think that there definitely needs to be some regulation that prevents them from doing it often, but I don't know. I felt like that was one of those scenarios where immediately everyone's talking about the wrong thing. Like, everyone's talking about the chair shot to the head and not, holy shit, Cody Rhodes did it again, you know, and Darby Allin had a star-making match. And I'll close my thoughts on Fyter Fest by saying one other thing, and that's that thank God that the time limit draw has made its return, because one of the things I loved about that match from the get-go was that in the preview package, it was like, I'm going to be the guy that makes Cody Rhodes 1-1. So we go back to this sports-centric thought process. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. It means that if a guy is trying to prevent a guy from having a perfect record in a new company, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, there's the stakes. This guy wants to give him one loss. He comes out with a body bag that says 1-1 on it. Now they're both, well, Cody Rhodes is 1-0-1 and Darby Allin's 0-0-1. And I think that if they make that matter, then time limit draws are going to be the type of thing that, I mean, I went upstairs and I told my wife, it's like, I just watched a match that ended in a time limit draw. She said, what's that? It's like, it's when there's a time limit and then no one wins either way in the time limit. And so it's essentially a tie. Like, I haven't seen that in 25 years.
Yeah, if you're going to be sports-centric, somebody's not going to win every time. Somebody's not going to be better than someone every time and be able to prove it in 7.5 minutes. You know, that's, so it was refreshing to me to see that. I mean, I started watching wrestling in 1991. The TV title was built around the heel trying to play the time limit. You know, there's a whole history of things you can do with a time limit. I will say, for me personally in my fandom, I have no... Like, an unprotected chair shot does not move me more than a protected chair shot. So I'm not out here saying, oh, man, just, yeah, do that because like, it gives me a rise. I'm just saying be careful about giving in to mob outrage because there's so Tony Khan is with the media last night, and he said there was two things. He's not a fan of intergender wrestling, so he said we may not see that in AEW. And he said there's two things he didn't like from All In. It was the fact that one of the women in the Battle Royal got legit punched in the face. And then the other thing that was offended him was he wasn't a fan of the Joey Ryan penis druids. And then the minute he said it, someone in that little so-called media was like, what? And then he started to backtrack immediately. Go watch that. Watch him backtrack all the way to, I didn't really mean that. So I'm actually probably more on the side of the people that were outraged, but I'm not. But I just say, be careful. Like, don't let your vision, don't completely lose your vision for the company based on the outrage. Because once they take away one thing, they'll take away another thing. Especially when half of them probably don't like your product anyway. So, yeah.
Fair. Well, speaking of history, gentlemen, there is an entity that has risen back to the forefront to a degree. I mean, not necessarily all that prominently. It has at times. But the National Wrestling Alliance is something I've wanted to talk about for quite a while on this show. When I went to the Crockett Cup in April, and I saw Nick Aldis versus Marty Scurll, and I'd been listening to your show talk about, and to be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure why it was as much of a focal point as it was on your show. I guess perhaps the idea of hopefully Marty Scurll joining AEW was a big catalyst for you guys, focusing on that, on All About All Elite leading up to the Crockett Cup. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but none of those guys are actually expected to imminently join AEW. But it was very interesting to me because it further, like the 10 pounds of gold I wasn't that familiar with, I started watching it because you guys talked about it on your show. Your opinion of Nick Aldis, Shane, in particular, I sort of went into the match with Marty Scurll with you guys laying down a layer of hype for that match that would not have been there without your comments. And so I've actually been going back. I'm about 37 episodes through the 10 pounds of gold. There's only 54 of them, so I'm almost caught up. This has all been in like the last 3 weeks, so I mean, I'm rapidly flying through them all. And nice. I mean, they're all easy to watch, but they all do a really good job of showcasing where the NWA was and where the NWA is and where the NWA might go. So, you know, honestly, I don't have a whole lot of structure in mind to talking about the NWA. I just want to spend some time discussing it with people that I know have paid attention to it. So let's start with this question. You know, you rewind the clock 2 years, and Tim Storm is the NWA champion. And with respect to Tim Storm, when you watch those early episodes of the 10 Pounds of Gold, there couldn't be anyone further from interesting to me than good old Tim Storm. I mean, he's a substitute, you know, math teacher or whatever the hell he is at a middle school, and he's the NWA world champion, and they're putting a spotlight on that. And I didn't look at that as a positive thing in the beginning. But here we are less than 2 years later, and we have seen Nick Aldis jump to the forefront. A lot of comments. You know, you guys are welcome to share your takes and your thoughts on the history of Nick Aldis with that championship. But to me, he at least presents himself as a guy who is worthy of being a top-tier wrestler in some sort of promotion. And I think he's done well with the NWA title. So, you know, All In was a huge deal for the NWA. I think that they've done well with events like the Crockett Cup. And I don't know what's next for them. I would love to speculate on what's next for them. But what's your temperature reading, Ms. Fan, on the NWA, where it is now compared to where it was a couple of years ago when it was tucked nicely into obscurity?
I mean, what you have now is tremendously better than what they've had for most of the past 25 years. You know, they were aligned with TNA for a while, but they weren't really, you know, it was just TNA. It wasn't really NWA. And I remember hearing a little bit about them when it was Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana, but really only because Adam Pearce was a guest on one of our podcasts. And if not for that, I might not have even heard about that. So, yeah, just the fact where now we can come on a podcast like this and actually be talking about the NWA, that's cool. Nick Aldis, I talked about on All About All the Elite. He's a guy I wrote off for a long time because I felt like I watched him for quite a while in TNA. He seemed to get lots and lots of chances. And say what you will about TNA, but there were guys who succeeded around him while he seemed to just really not go anywhere. So I thought, okay, this guy just isn't going to go anywhere. Now he's totally winning me over. So it's really changed my perspective on him. He and the NWA have been really good for each other. I also want to shout out the fact that I think just this week they allied themselves with Eli Drake, which I think is a wonderful thing for them. This is a guy who I think is capable of creating a lot of buzz, and I think is only going to be better for them as they continue this whatever it is 20-year plan that supposedly they have, and I don't know what I think about that. But for the moment, I like what they're doing. I'm glad they've been able to kind of pull themselves up to where they are.
What do you think, Shane?
I will throw out a few things, and then you guys can take from it what you want. But so I'll start back with we had the Crockett Cup, which, you know, listeners of this show probably already know. You were there. Here's something about the NWA. Not only were we talking about it on this podcast, but there are three people on this show. Two people ordered the Crockett Cup, and one was live there for it. So that's not nothing. But right after it, Billy Corgan goes on Busted Open, and he talks about the vision for what he wants. And it really is that 20-year plan. They need to really rename it if they're going to be a 20-year plan. The process worked for Philadelphia. They got fans to buy in, but 20 years. He thinks that the Tony Khan economy is a bit of a false economy, that they're paying out too much money, that he's not necessarily willing to do that. But if it proves not to be a false economy, then you adjust accordingly. He said that the relationship with Ring of Honor is expanding, that his goal this year, he wants episodic TV, whether it's on like YouTube or whether it's on Kingdom of Honor as part of their package. He wants 4 to 6 big shows a year, kind of, he said, a Bellator UFC model. And so that's kind of the stuff that he threw out there. So it is that long game for him. But I want to talk real quick about Nick Aldis because that's kind of what drew me in. And I'm so, folks, we got lives as people doing podcasts, and we got busy lives a lot of times. So I am moved by the fact that Doc would hear about some NWA stuff and then go quickly, that you would go quickly and watch the 10 pounds of gold because that's worthy viewing material if you care about storytelling and pro wrestling. And that excites me to hear that you did that. Real quick, Nick Aldis, this is a man who was part of the biggest match, the match that they left talking about at All In with Cody Rhodes. He was part of that. Then they bumped an NWA show that did more than you expect with the 70th anniversary. Who was part of that? Nick Aldis. And then you got you got the Crockett Cup. Here's how I will say how important Nick Aldis is to the NWA. I thought about this yesterday. I will put the match with Marty Scurll. When you talk about world title matches from this year, you need to talk about that match in the conversation. It's that good. And then the only other thing I thought is, what could have made the Crockett Cup on that same level as the title match? But what if Nick Aldis wasn't wrestling Marty Scurll? What if he was teaming with Marty Scurll? And what if they were in that other bracket? And at the end of it, you got Marty Scurll and Nick Aldis versus PCO and Brody. To me, that's money right there. So Nick Aldis can give you a world title match that's too big for your company, or he could give you a tag team tournament that's too big for your company. Either way, he's kind of bigger than the product right now. That's why I'm glad they're bringing in Eli Drake. I think that's going to be a great adjustment. The only other thing I recommend, go watch the Busted Open interview with Nick Aldis the week after they talked, the day after they talked to Marty Scurll in the lead up to the Crockett Cup. In that interview, Nick Aldis defends himself the way that I wish he would defend himself as a character on TV. We live in a day that you are a brand, and if you're not supporting your brand and telling people what to think and how to think about your brand, then you're behind somebody else. So that's why the Elite, they're the cool kids, and Nick Aldis is sitting at that next table over, because he is the humble, we're building this long project. You can't be hot for 20 years, so you put me on a 20-year plan, I don't care who you are, you're not going to be that hot because you would burn out. So he's that OG, I love the Funks, I love the Flares, I love the NWA, and that's nice and all. But I want to hear from the guys on that Busted Open where he lights up the Busted Open crew for how they measure wrestling on T-shirts and coolness, and they don't look at what he's doing and actually building a wrestling company. So the thing that I would suggest, this was before Eli even came in, I would love to eventually, when we got episodic TV, take the man who's been humble and help build your company, and then take an Eli Drake type character and have all the legends praise Eli Drake or praise that next guy up. And Nick Aldis noticed that, like, no, I've lifted you up. I brought your product back. Nobody's patting me on the back. I'm doing all the patting on the back. And then let that Nick Aldis from that Busted Open interview start to emerge. But you got to give this man his credit. I think the only reason he doesn't have it is because he's not doing it himself. But, man, the six-month window, put it up there with almost anybody. He's doing great things. NWA is on that slow burn, and we're talking about it on the show.
I think it's fascinating. I think that of all the things that are going on in wrestling right now, obviously the rise of AEW is perhaps the most fascinating, because it's just like, all right, you rewind the clock a year, and, you know, no one could have predicted we'd be where we are right now with AEW and what it means to wrestling at large, you know, not just as its own entity, but to wrestling at large. But, you know, right behind that is what the NWA is doing to me, because it's so unique what they're trying to do. I mean, they don't have a TV deal. You know, they get these spotlights with Ring of Honor. That association, I guess, in that sense, is serving them well, because they're in the discussion even when they're not, you know, having a big show of their own. I mean, the Ring of Honor pay-per-view was last Friday, and you've got Nick Aldis teaming with Eli Drake on that show, so it keeps the NWA title in the spotlight. But you know, just overall, I mean, it's just interesting to see where it is compared to, you know, prior to my research for Through the 10 Pounds of Gold, everything that I had looked at was through Nick Aldis and his championship matches with Cody Rhodes, both last year, and then with Marty Scurll, and my experience with the Crockett Cup. I mean, that was pretty much it. So I look at this, and I'm just kind of curious to see where it goes now. My stepdad has this saying about new business. He was a very successful businessman for a long time, and he has this saying about new businesses, that the first year it sleeps, the second year it creeps, and the third year it leaps. So we're entering year three of Corgan's tenure as owner of the NWA, and then obviously that's not a new business, but it is new in the sense that Corgan's vision for it is completely separate from the days of when Tim Storm was the champion for 400 some odd days. So I'm very, very curious to see what a hypothetical leap might look like for them. You know, thus far, mid-2017 to mid-2018 definitely reflects back as sleep-type growth. Mid-2018 to mid-2019 has been a bit more than creeping, but to me, in the broader sense, that's probably pretty accurate. So what does that leap look like? I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, gentlemen, because I have some thoughts I'll share momentarily. But, Ms. Fan, what are your thoughts? Like, what in your mind, having been a little bit more intimately connected with the NWA these past 9 months, dating back to All In. What's your thought on what their next step should be? Because, I mean, to me, it doesn't seem like going a traditional route, like with, you know, getting a TV show, having weekly episodic TV, and adding to the bukus of wrestling viewing that we have at our disposal, adding to the hat in that kind of way doesn't seem to me like the best route to take. What do you think is the best route to take?
Well, it's hard to say. I think I really can't stress enough how much I think signing Eli Drake was a really good move for them, because so far Nick Aldis has kind of came off like the only member of the NWA roster, and everyone else is just sort of, you know, passing through. So if they can have another guy like that who's really going to be able to be front and center, like, my God, you could make videos about Eli Drake all day and all night, I think, and just have him talk, and you'd get a lot out of that. So that's great. I do think they don't necessarily need to break this partnership, but I do wonder if being tied to Ring of Honor so closely is going to hold them back, because really just this past, I don't know, several months at least, Ring of Honor really seemed to be in a terrible state. You know, I was looking at their pictures from Best in the World, which is one of their biggest shows, and doing it and really just having a horrible, horrible attendance from what it looked like. And having Matt Taven on top as a guy who's just, you know, talk about being cold. You know, who talks about Matt Taven? Who even knows who Matt Taven is? But he's out here beating guys who are hotter than him just because Ring of Honor doesn't have any faith that they'll stick around. So it's not a good situation necessarily to be so heavily tied to Ring of Honor. I know early on when we were watching NWA, it's like, oh, great, the NWA is like a mid-card Ring of Honor title right now. And they've convinced me otherwise, but I think there's still some perception there. So as for what they could do, the 10 counts of gold thing has worked for a reason. It's very digestible. I think maybe – I wonder if you can expand that. Like, they already cover Nick Aldis going and having different title matches, not just the biggest ones that you hear about, but, like, other ones as well. Can you expand that? Can you make it something where you have some core NWA roster members – and maybe they have different titles and maybe they don't, but they're going around to different places and you follow them and you just keep expanding. And then suddenly, hey, maybe it's a big deal that like the NWA title is going to be defended at some show near you. It's not an NWA show, but it's connected to the NWA. I don't know. Like, I think there could be something with that. That's the best I've got for the moment.
Shane, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, how much of the relationship between the NWA and Nick Aldis is pretty how contingent on that relationship is the NWA's near and say 1 or 2 years into the future? Like, how, if that relationship goes south for whatever reason, or if Nick Aldis, who before this relationship was someone who no one really seemed to want, you know, WWE, he's mentioned that there were some political things that were going on that blocked him from even getting an opportunity to speak with WWE about maybe going there. You know, it's not, he's not the kind of prospect pre-NWA championship where there's a lot of buzz about Nick Aldis. And maybe you could say there still isn't, but at times throughout the last year, there has been a lot. And he does own, in my opinion, I would agree with you absolutely. If you haven't seen Nick Aldis versus Marty Scurll, you need to. And it's really low-key one of the best matches of the year.
It's so, smart.
Yeah, it's an awesome match. And it's the type of match that would be very rewatchable, because it's not just about, you know, it's not just about winning. Like, I love New Japan, but in New Japan, it's like so much of the focus is on winning. It's like, well, once it's over, it's like, well, okay. I would never have any reason to go back and watch that again necessarily, because most of the drama is derived from who wins and loses. I don't think that was necessarily the case with the Skrull versus Aldis match. But Aldis, NWA, you split that apart at a time when Aldis is now becoming more of a hotter name in the business again, showcasing what he can do, in some cases on very high-profile stages. What happens to the NWA then? Are they in a position to be able to grow without him, or is this pretty much Nick Aldis's show until further notice?
Well, I think if he left today, put the belt back on Tim Storm, would be my response, because I think it was the perfect storm in that Aldis and Marty Scurll, I think, have both said that Nick Aldis was, like, his plan was to get out of the business. So he was that, didn't have the opportunities and fed up and burnt out, and then the NWA thing came along. So you got a guy who looks like a star, who is willing to get out there and hustle, and doesn't have the ego to kind of, like, how many people who have flirted with success like Aldis has in the past would have used this and tried to immediately leverage it to get out of the NWA? And to the best of our knowledge, he hasn't done that. So you got a partner who is being loyal to you. He's the only one that makes me excited about it, not because he's the most exciting thing that ever came across, but I listen to Billy Corgan. There's nothing sexy about listening to a man talk about his 20-year plan. You know, listening to him talk about Tony Khan spending too much money, it's a false economy, I'm not going to invest money in my wrestlers. You know, like, I don't want to hear that. So he's the face of the company. He hustles for the company. They let Willie Mack walk. I would not, in any world, I would have locked Willie Mack down, but they let him walk to TNA. Yeah. So, like, I get no hint that they're trying to do anything beyond Aldis. So what they have is Aldis. And to that point, I think we do need something that's episodic. We don't need TV, but, like, and I look forward to hearing what you're going to say, because you might change my mind because I haven't thought about this. But right now, 10 Pounds of Gold is low-key the somber version of being the Elite. It has a very core audience that wants what the NWA is giving it, and it loves Nick Aldis, and it will go where that product is going. If you could have that weekly on YouTube, but it's a show, or if you could have it with Ring of Honor, if that's what they're going to do, I do think that would enlarge things a little bit. Last thing I'll say, I'm not behind the scenes, so I don't know why the Ring of Honor deal works so well and it's expanding, but really, I think the best thing that could have happened, if you replace Ring of Honor with AEW, then I would see a whole different upside for that for the NWA.
Mm.
My thought on how to get the NWA championship up to its next highest level would be to take the greatest advantage that the Ring of Honor relationship affords the NWA at this moment is the relationship that Ring of Honor has with New Japan.
Okay.
That, to me, perceptionally, would add a dynamic to the NWA thought process, because I think there's a lot of people that are going to see that the NWA discussion happens on this podcast about 45 minutes in and then look ahead to when they can skip to the next thing. Because, you know, at this point, maybe a quarter of the people that listen to this show, I think, are going to care that we're talking about the NWA. I think what might change that in the short term is if Nick Aldis goes on a tear through the rest of the year, has another really big spotlight opportunity like he had against Marty Scurll to build and achieve something great from a storytelling and character building perspective through the 10 Pounds of Gold on whatever show that takes place on. And then Wrestle Kingdom 14, I think that if they could find a way, I don't think it's going to work. If he ends up wrestling like a Tomohiro Ishii, for it in a spot that was comparable to the place that the British heavyweight title had on the Madison Square Garden show that NJPW and Ring of Honor did together earlier in the year, I don't think that that really changes perception that much for it. But if they could end up putting Nick Aldis in a match against, like, Tanahashi, and Tanahashi beats him in a 23-minute spotlight match, and then they do their return kind of in the Cody versus Nick Aldis light from All In to the NWA 70th anniversary show. I think if they were able to pull something like that off, then people would take serious notice. I think that they would take serious notice of Nick Aldis because I think he would thrive in a spotlight like that. I've got no reason to think at this point with the three big matches that I've seen Nick Aldis have, and I've pretty much watched in my perusal of the 10 Pounds of Gold. They build to all these little matches, so I've watched all of those matches. I've watched his match with, all of the, dating back to Tim Storm, to Colt Cabana in China, to Flip Gordon, to, I'm right around All In. That's where I'm at with 10 Pounds of Gold. We're building up beyond that to the 70th anniversary show rematch. But I think if they could get that association with Ring of Honor to connect them to New Japan signature show on an event, by the way, that's going to be split across 2 days. So, I mean, it's It's Wrestle Kingdom 14 is split across 2 days this time. So they're going to have to fill some stuff. So if you end up having, say, the first night of Wrestle Kingdom features a spotlight NWA title match where it's no less than the third biggest match on that part of the card, to me, that would be a nice stepping stone forward. What say you to that?
I think that would be great for the NWA. I think the biggest obstacle would be getting New Japan even interested in that, because we've seen them bring over the Ring of Honor champion to Wrestle Kingdom before, and they didn't get a very good spot. So how then do they go the next step to taking, like, kind of the side partner of Ring of Honor and getting them to that spot? I don't know if I could see New Japan going for that. I'd be glad to be wrong, and I think it's a cool idea. I just think that it is unlikely at this time. But, again, happy to be wrong about that.
Would money talk in a situation like that? I mean, what the hell is Billy Corgan spending his money on at this point? So rather than spend it on a weekly episodic show that might actually lose money, you know, throw whatever you had in the budget for a little while toward, hey, I'll give you $2 million. Put the NWA Championship in a spotlight on Wrestle Kingdom. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's just me spitballing, but
it's a nice idea. I don't know if he spent $2 million in 2 years on the NWA, just from what we've seen, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, the scenario is nice. Until Billy Corgan does, there's part of me that respects 13%. Let's just say of me respects the fact that he's not running headlong. Like he's seen companies do that, and it costs them. But there's also a part of me that, like, put something up to show me, like, I'm investing, and I'm not sure you're investing. So, you know, show me you're investing so I can invest more. Here's a question for you. So, okay, let's say, number one, we got this idea, which is a great idea, I think. Top three matches, whatever, on the card, biggest show of the year. Do you think it would move the needle at all if you could get a bigger star on a lesser stage? So if you could get a Nick Aldis to Russell Okada somewhere, do you think that would move the needle?
In a hypothetical Crockett Cup 2020?
Yeah, because they have the next big show, according to Corgan, is late summer, early fall, so they're doing several a year, and it might not mean anything, but Nick Aldis was, you know, asking fans on Twitter, like, who do you want me to wrestle when I get to the United Kingdom? Apparently somebody threw out Okada, and he's like, I really meant, you know, UK wrestlers, but let's make this happen. So he's kind of, you know, he's kind of pushing that, putting it out there. So I'm just, do you think that would move the needle, or do you think just you need that big exposure of the big stage, even if it's with a lesser New Japan star?
I feel like if he wrestled a New Japan star, or if he wrestled a bigger star on a lesser stage, I think that that helps maintain the momentum they have.
Good point.
But I think that getting on to a Wrestle Kingdom takes the perception up a notch, especially, but only if, like, it can't be, like, if it's a 13-minute never open weight championship type slot, then I don't think that really does a whole hell of a lot for it. I don't think it would hurt, but I don't think that it's a great thing. I think that it has to be somewhere where, because, I mean, Nick Aldis isn't a 13-minute wrestler. It's like putting Cody Rhodes in a 13-minute match. It's just, that's not his strength, flying around, doing a whole bunch of highly athletic stuff in a short period of time. You know, if there's anything I've taken away from Aldis, it's that he's a storyteller. So I guess some of it would depend on the presentation. I mean, if everyone comes away from it saying that's match of the year, then it's, speaking of the hypothetical of the big star on a lesser stage, then certainly. But my knee-jerk reaction to that would be that it would not move the needle much. If it would just kind of, because right now, I mean, I think you look at those 10 pounds of gold. They're like sitting, if I'm not mistaken, at maybe like around 25,000-30,000 viewers per episode. And that's, I mean, nothing to, I mean, that's nothing to write off.
For the NWA, that's good. Yeah.
But what would take them to, you know, what would take them to a consistent 25,000 to 50,000 more viewers? I think it would have to be a big match on a bigger stage, built well too, like some of the stuff we've seen before.
I'll say maybe a more realistic idea along that same line is, you kind of alluded to it earlier, ditch Ring of Honor, because they seem like a sinking ship right now, to be totally honest. join up with AEW. Look at how well the Cody Nick Aldis thing came off. I think Shane said it earlier in the show. That was the match everyone walked away talking about. If you can do some AEW related Nick Aldis versus Kenny Omega, you know, if you can do Nick Aldis versus Pentagon presented the way that we always talk about Pentagon, there's I think a richer and more realistic option there, and that's maybe more what I would want to see if the NWA is going to jump up that much farther.
My first choice above anything would be link up, ditch Ring of Honor and link up with AEW, but for just listening to that interview, he just seems so put off by AEW, so I don't know what the relationship is or isn't, but there's so much world. And then Marty Scurll is legit his friend, and most of us believe whether it's right or wrong, come fall, Marty Scurll's going to AEW. You know, so the links are – everything links together except the official paperwork that this is where you need to be. But I think the one thing that makes it hesitant to even have these conversations, I don't know that they want to grow their brand like that. Like, I don't know if they want to maintain their brand or grow it right now, because – Billy Corgan, too, in that interview, said he appreciates the fan base he wants right now. That he appreciates are the fans who appreciate the long journey and are not going to rush it and are not going to expect him to rush it, but just want that long journey. So, you know, I don't know if the man with the money has the vision that we're even, like, talking about right now.
Mm. So. Well, speaking of men with money and vision, or potentially lack thereof, pivoting a little bit to our final topic of the night. The big news in the wrestling world outside of Fyter Fest this past week was the WWE appointments of Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman to some sort of whatever title that I've already forgotten, because I can't say that I'm coming into this part of the conversation with a great deal of enthusiasm. But nevertheless, I mean, Paul Heyman, Eric Bischoff, along with Vince McMahon, the three-headed monster that was so heavily responsible for what we saw at the peak of the wrestling boom in the late 1990s, the most competitive period in pro wrestling lore, some would say. They're coming back. I don't know how I feel about it. I would be curious. You guys are both really not WWE guys in any way, shape, or form. But this is big news. What do you think this means? Is this just one of those, like, the first thing that popped into my head when I saw it was, all right, well, we're about 6 months away from XFL 2020's kickoff, so maybe Vince McMahon just wants to, you know, pivot to that for a while with his own attention and focus, and he needs some guys to, you know, run the ship in people that he trusts. I mean, these aren't new, innovative thinkers in modern times, and Eric Bischoff, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't exactly have a sterling track record beyond what he accomplished in a bubble during that 1996 to 1997 period. So what are we looking at here? What's your take on what this means from WWE, particularly as it pertains to the bigger talking point that's been the focus of the last month and a half in pro wrestling, which is it's AEW versus WWE. Ms. Fan, do you in any way interpret this as a response in a competitive way? What's your take?
I'm going to look back at your statement when you were bringing this up, and so many vague things, so many qualifiers added, so much that we really have no idea about. I think it's difficult to even speculate about this stuff. Could it be related to AEW? I wouldn't be surprised. Could it be related to Stomping Grounds doing really badly? Could it be related to Seth Rollins breaking down on Twitter and going after people and his friend and all this other stuff? You know, could it be the fact that supposedly Fox had a big meeting with them and maybe told them that they need to shape up or they're not going to get the benefits of that deal that they made? I think it's probably a lot of factors leading into this. And then again, it could be something that they were setting up even before all this stuff happened. So it's hard to say. I'm skeptical that it will make a big difference, because Vince McMahon has such a record as being the biggest control freak ever. I think even if he tries to do XFL at the same time, it'll be hard for him not to come in and step on everyone's toes like he always does. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. There is a small bit of nostalgia for me because I started watching in 2003 when Bischoff and Heyman were all over television. So goody for that, I guess. But it's not going to draw me back to watch again unless I hear some really good and really different things.
You guys being the the creators of the WCW Legacy Series and living through all those pay-per-views toward the tail end of WCW's existence. Shane, what do you think about the idea of bringing back? I think there's some merit to the concept of bringing Paul Heyman back into a creative role and in such an important spot in 2019 because of his history having run a WWE program to great success in the SmackDown 6 in 2002 and 2003 when Miz Fan began to watch. But Eric Bischoff, thoughts?
I absolutely bracket off Paul Heyman from this conversation, as you just did. The one good thing that it did, no matter what happens afterward, is it stopped one of the strangest bleedings I have seen in my entire life as a wrestling fan, which is from the time Jon Moxley came to AEW until this announcement, every single piece of news about AEW everywhere seemed favorable, and every piece of news about WWE seemed negative. And that was the first time since that occurrence that they have kind of just stolen the oxygen, and they did it right before AEW, and the whole conversation online has been Bischoff and Heyman. So it did something there. What it does after, Paul Heyman could legit be a genius that books the right guys in best case scenario in a perfect world. But the majority of what they could do to change the product, you don't actually need Paul Heyman or Eric Bischoff to do. People are flipping out because, oh man, Eric Bischoff had this revolutionary idea back when we didn't know he was coming to WWE. He said that the two shows, the two different brands, they should be different from each other. So that's the breakthrough that you get. And I'm pretty damn sure if they wanted to actually try, they could come up with that themselves. If not, for God's sake, what is the problem? But so it's a little flashy to me. Miz Fan is more of a fan, I think, of Eric Bischoff than I am because we come into wrestling at different times, you know, and what he just said. But for my personal, Eric Bischoff may come in great, but Eric Bischoff to me seems all smoke and mirrors. And this is the strange. This is the strangest thing I can ever say because it makes no sense. All of the world that I am reading online seems to be excited about Bischoff and Heyman. And then even though they think Bischoff was the worst thing that ever happened to TNA and was bad for WCW, and I am the weird human being who my favorite time ever in the history of Impact Wrestling was, I think, when Bischoff and Hogan were in charge, if that was Bobby Roode having the longest title reign in the history of the company and Bully Ray having his reign. But I'm not excited because every podcast I watch, listen to, of Eric Bischoff makes me think, you don't know anything about anything. And I always felt like that. And then kind of when I listened to his podcast, I got the idea that he didn't sit in creative meetings. He doesn't consider himself a creative guy. He considers himself a businessman. So whether he helps with the business, I don't know, but he's almost halfway, half self-professed not to be the creative guy. So then what are we doing here? I don't know. But I think it's an attention getter. I think it still comes down to what Vince McMahon will allow. And Vince McMahon, if it changes and it's better, again, I don't think they needed them. They just needed to allow change. So I don't know what we're getting overall, and honestly still don't care. So they haven't moved the needle with me.
Yeah, my skepticism with regards to WWE is still at an all-time high. I mean, I am not on board with most of what they do. There are so many little things that I think need to change before I can really reinvest to the level that I had been investing in for 25 years. You know, the level that prompted the books to be written that I wrote about. You know, that, geez, I mean, to me, don't tell me that there's going to be new creative heads. Just change creative.
Yes.
You know, just change what you're doing. You don't need to tell me who's in charge of it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Just make it better and do it consistently and make things make sense and return to the basics. And then we can get somewhere. But, I mean, I my first reaction to it on Twitter was, so you mean Eric Bischoff and, but you know, by running, you mean running headfirst into the same creative wall dressed in a three-piece suit that everyone else does every week? You know, because by all accounts, this decade has done nothing but bring to the forefront more than ever before that it's a one-man show. So if it's the same guy running it and it's just these two guys are throwing stuff into the wall that he is, then, I mean, it's are we trying to get to 2019, or are we trying to go back to 1999 still? Because everything this decade has been about going backward in WWE and not forward. So, you know, I don't see how much this will change things. What'd you guys think of the Seth Rollins, Will Ospreay, Seth Rollins versus the world thing on Twitter played out? I thought it was awful. I'm a huge Seth Rollins fan. He's my favorite wrestler. And I did nothing. I came away with nothing from it. But, dude, that kind of felt – that was quite arrogant and not exactly the kind of leadership that I'd like to see. I'm all for repping the brand. But one of the guys that tweeted in response to what I said about it spoke about John Cena and how great of an ambassador he was for their product, good, bad, or otherwise. John Cena would make a great politician. He's like The Rock. He just has this way to respond to things that, you know, even if there might be a little twinge of arrogance in it based on the position that he held and what his perception of WWE is, it was always in a way that I felt like, okay, I mean, that's a sharp dude right there. He just answered the question in the way that that I would answer it if someone had asked me and I was in his position. Seth Rollins came across very pedantic to me. He came across as, you know, the kind of very, very millennial, frankly. You know, you get in a little spat, someone says something you weren't expecting, so your D-jerk response is immediately to be kind of a jackass.
I don't know about millennial, but I'll just say I'm not the biggest fan of Seth Rollins. I know a lot of people are, and I think that's fine. And I know some people even defended to me very hard these comments that were made, but I just don't see it. My gut reaction was I thought it was pretty embarrassing, and that I haven't really moved, in my personal opinion, from that spot.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. It was cringeworthy. I am a Seth Rollins fan as much as I can be, considering I can't access his world. But several things bother me about it. Number one is out of character. So I'm thinking, is this Seth Rollins? Is this WWE? Is this the reaction to Jon Moxley? Because it just comes from nowhere, and all of a sudden, and then he's also the man's man, and they're building that relationship online. And it seems like, I don't watch WWE, but from the news I read, all her feuds, it seems like right now, come from Twitter beefs. And so I am not on Twitter anymore because I fucking hate it, and I think that the best human being is made into the worst human being in that collective mess. That's just my opinion, and so I want my entertainment to transcend that. I don't want it to go into the pit with that, and everything about it just turned me off even more. And so it was a bad, bad week for Seth Rollins as far as my view of him, and I think he came off looking small, and I don't think that needed to be the case.
Yeah, really unfortunate is the way I would categorize it. It was just not a good look for him, and by association, just a further black mark on the company at large. I mean, I get what he's doing. I think my comment on social media about it was like, what's he supposed to say? Oh, yeah, WWE creative sucks. I wish I didn't work here. I wish I wasn't the Universal Champion. I mean, Seth Rollins is probably the only guy in the company other than AJ Styles over the past few years that has had any sort of logical creative direction. I mean, so it's him and one other guy, and that's pretty much the freaking list of people that have been pushed consistently and in a way that in any way I can associate with what WWE has done historically. But, you know, that being said, it was obtuse to me. The way he came across was just not good. So I hope that, I hope better for that guy. I hope that he moves beyond it. I hope that, you know, maybe a few interviews in the coming weeks clear that up, because he's not doing himself any favors. I mean, that's to me, I mean, that's who Seth Rollins' target audience is. I mean, that's who. If you've got him as your universal champion, then he's going after and trying to, you know, to be supported by the guy, the people who love Will Ospreay and would just rather see Seth Rollins have the kind of opportunities to wrestle like Will Ospreay gets. And for him to go out and have a Twitter spat with that guy and come across it the manner that he did, and then double down on it with some of the ridiculous comments that he made about WWE being the home of the best wrestling in the world. And, I mean, that's subjective, I know. But, I mean, still. And then the comments made about Ambrose, just not a good look for Seth Rollins. So I would love to see us get to a point. The only reason I brought up WWE in this setting is because I think it would be awesome if WWE responded to the kind of energy that AEW is bringing and tried to be better and tried to, you know, address some of the core creative problems that people have had with them that led, in my opinion, to the very existence of AEW. AEW's existence would not be possible if it were not for the angst created by all the stupid decisions that WWE has made over the past several years. That's my stance anyway. So that being said, I would love to see WWE step up to the plate and get better, because I think it would be great for wrestling if there was a quality competition, because I don't give a crap about these companies and how much money they make. I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. I care about how much I get for the money I pay for their product. That's the only thing I care about financially. So, you know, all that being said, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Shane, any closing thoughts from you and anything you would like to plug before we sign off?
First, that's a great point that you make. Seth Rollins doesn't need to be out there reminding Vince McMahon that little man is an insult. So that's...
How weird is that? He's like 10 pounds heavier, if that. So strange. Oh, my.
I wouldn't go for that narrative. Thank you. I was pitched my little bit. Thank you for having us on. Big fan of Doc's work. So, you know, we listen to you, listen to us. We have a lot of cross conversation, and glad that we got to actually have it in real time. We do All About All Elite every Saturday. We are going to be off a few weeks in the summer because I'm finishing up my dissertation. So if you don't see us, look for us, look for past shows, inquire with us. Ms. Van might hit that Twitter. I can't do that because I'm not on it. So, I will say, though, from me, Google WCW The Legacy Series, because it seems like every once, twice, three times, four times in a year, we'll have somebody who will go somehow find them. We don't even know the person sometimes. And then they'll go back and through the whole 3 years of history, and they'll start emailing us. And it brings back shows that we forgot we did. A favorite of mine, we did when Terry Funk turned on Ric Flair. I don't go back and watch them, but, man, we felt that was a good show. And then we had someone email us about that, and that's been off the air forever. So check that out sometime. And that's all from me, man. Just thanks for having us on. Enjoy the conversation about pro wrestling.
Ms. Van, throwing it to you, sir.
Yeah, I'll just say thanks very much again for having us. It has been a real pleasure. I don't think we've had the three of us on one podcast before, so let's do this again sometime soon, for as long as all three of us have been doing this kind of stuff. So it was a very good time. Do check out the Doc's work. Check out lordsofpain.net if you haven't already. He's got some just phenomenal columns up there, a lot of great written material. For me, you can check out All About All Elite on Spreaker on Saturdays, and also do a show called The Global Revolution, where we talk about a lot of smaller wrestling products in 2019. We like to talk about Chikara, WXW in Germany. We talk about Lucha Libre, women's wrestling from around the world, just a lot of different stuff. I hope you check that out. That's also on Spreaker on the same LOP radio channel. It's really all I got for right now, so I'm at Spectral Gent on Twitter. If you do want to shout me out, I wish I could abandon it. Like, honest to God, I do, but I have too many connections on there. So I'm up there right now, so shout me out if you want to.
I feel the same about Twitter, by the way. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us tonight. This has been your audio prescription for all things professional wrestling, and your next appointment with me is next Sunday morning. So for Ms. Fan and Shane, this has been the Doc, Chad Matthews. Everyone have a great post-Fighter Fest week, and we'll catch you next time.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the Mania era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the